This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
9:20 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana, Xiaoning and Philip. Let's get a quick update on the FBM KLCI.
Going nowhere, just up very marginally by 0.2%. Currently 1,402 points on a year-to-date basis. We are just down 6.2%.
Turning our attention to the impact of SVB's collapse. The collapse of the 16th largest lender in the U.S., Silicon Valley Bank, and subsequently Signature Bank, took markets by surprise, not just because of the speed in which it took place, but also the impact that it subsequently had on global financial markets.
Kudos, though, to U.S. regulators who stepped in quickly to restore stability, but the repercussions have been widely felt, with credit and equity markets going into freefall, with the U.S. 30-year Treasury yields declining 8% on a year-to-date basis. Once again, risk-off became the de facto action for institution funds, even as analysts struggle to explain the sell-off in what some see as an irrational market.
So to help us make sense of the recent turn of events, including the latest casualty, Deutsche Bank, and its impact on credit markets, we speak to Ang Beng Kwan, Head of Investments at Hong Leong Islamic Asset Management. Good morning, Beng Kwan. Thanks for joining us. So how has the collapse of SVB and Signature Bank in the US impacted global credit conditions? Are all bonds being hit by risk aversion and fears of credit lines being withdrawn?
Morning. Glad to be back. So it is imperative that market sell first, ask questions later. So we can see that the recent US Euro bank turmoil has unsurprisingly driven the broad risk-off move in markets, has yields tumbled and dollar became this next safe haven asset. So when the decline in rates, though it may be imperative for dollar strengthening, it could be counterproductive for EM credits. So EM credit spreads have widened close to 60 basis points for sovereigns and 55 basis points for corporates, respectively. But the IG and the higher spreads have moved close to 139 bps and 40 bps higher as well, with high correlation in this movement in these types of risk events. It's not surprising, as we have seen back then in GFC and the COVID recessions. But in terms of whether credit lines will be withdrawn, that treasury rates and credits has been impacted, as we have been observed in the markets, by the risk aversion. And it won't be withdrawn, but the bank capital channel should lead to tighter credit conditions. Post-GFC, credit standards have been tightening over the past few years. And as banks increasingly anticipate a recession, they will likely continue to tighten further. I think this is a playbook through which banks play a supporting role in helping the Fed slow down the economic activity. But we have to see another bank-intermediated channel of monetary policy is the bank capital channel. When the Fed rates hikes rates, general business conditions deteriorate as overall demand growth slows. And this leads banks to write down their value of their loans, which reduces their capital buffer. And banks often respond to this hit in terms of the mark-to-market losses by deleveraging, reducing their supply of credit to the real economy. I mean, all banks operate in rising and falling interest rate environments. However, we see certain banks must do navigate a changing rate of environments, and these have been seen in the errors of asset liability management contributed to Silicon Valley and the Signature Bank falling into receivership.
Okay, Beng Kwan, of course, we are now watching the fire sale of Credit Suisse to UBS, which is actually a pretty much done deal. The bank has been rescued, but the deal required the write-down of 16 billion francs of their additional Tier 1 to zero value. Now, so backtrack a bit, you know, what is an AT1 bond and why was this move unusual?
AT1s, or known as additional Tier 1 bonds, are subordinated debt instrument which holders are repaid before shareholders, but after all the other debt structures have been repaid to other debt holders. These instruments, AT1s, are subject to specific risks, especially, for example, coupon deferral and as well as principal write-downs under certain circumstances. For example, non-viability events or contingency events when their common equity Tier 1 or the CET1 dipped below a certain threshold. They make up as a part of the capital recapitalization plan in terms of to support the banks in terms of the market turmoil. Banks were allowed to issue this class structure in order to strengthen their Tier 1 capital and thus comply with the Basel III norms. But yes, this AT1 debacle, right, has occurred previously. And the only thing that we learn from history is that we learn nothing. Remember back then in 2020, whereby the Yes Bank, one of the India's largest private banks, also wrote down their AT1s due to high NPLs and also deteriorating financial position. We also trace back to the AT1 write-downs back into Banco Popular, which is back in a Spanish bank, which was taken over by Banco Santander. They wrote down close to 1.4 billion of AT1 bonds back in 2017.
Right. Benkwan, do you expect any contagion impact on Asian bonds, or is a spillover effect of any just on financial institutions?
APAC bonds have not invested much into CS81s directly or Credit Suisse, and thus they are not subject to impairment loss, but the AT1 funding cost is likely to rise across Asia-Pacific markets. However, the contagion impact on Asian bonds is idiosyncratic, as Indonesia, Thailand, and the Philippines see sharper price action, as a higher proportion of AT1s is issued in foreign currency. On the other hand, there is limited impact for AT1s in China, Taiwan, and Korea, as AT1s are mainly held by domestic investors. And Korea AT1s is resilient due to easier regulatory requirements for burden sharing with investors within the bank capital. Domestically, banks may become more cautious on capital management, and as such, they may slow down their assets growth plans. This would likely lead to lower credit multipliers and slower loan growth, which is then resulted in downside risk for macro growth and a rise in asset quality issues.
So, Benkwan, has this recent banking crisis changed Hong Leong's fixed income strategy? I mean, where do you see opportunities?
Okay, we have remained steadfast in our strategy in terms of three things. One, we always been defensive in our duration play. We still like the short end of the yield curve, but we see there are pockets of opportunities at the belly or the intermediate part of the yield curve, which we think there are still some relative play should the OPL remain stand pat. Number two is that always credit diversify your portfolio, and the play of ESG is quite important here. We see there's a healthy demand for sustainability bonds, as markets are still relatively in short of ESG supplies. And thirdly is that we remain cautious on cyclical sectors and sectors which are prone to policy changes. We favor credits that are cash flow generating in terms of their real assets and issuers with strong balance sheet and manageable debt levels.
Benkwan, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Ang Benkwan, Head of Investments at Hong Leong Islamic Asset Management, helping us understand the implications of the banking sector turmoil that's happening around the world and what we could expect next. It is 9:28 in the morning. We are heading into the 9:30 a.m. news bulletin. And then after that, on Pressing Matters, Philip C is actually going to be exploring this topic further. Stay tuned for that conversation, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.